Good evening.
Thanks for coming. Before we begin tonight's class, just an invitation to the entire community. This week, Friday, is a very special day. It's the 19th day of Kislev, Yutes Kislev, which is the Yahrzeit Hilula of the Mezritcha Magid, the successor of the holy Baal Shem Tov, the Rebbe of all Hasidim, Reb Dov Ber, the holy Mezritcha Magid. It is also the day of the liberation of his very special student, Reb Shneur Zalman of Liadi, the Holy Tanya, that was released from prison when he was imprisoned in Russia because he was teaching Hasidus, and there was a great accusation in heaven against the spreading of the deepest esoteric and deepest teachings of the Torah that is going to usher in the light of Mashiach, the Mashiach's era into the world. And on this day, on Yutes Kislev, permission was granted from above for the wellsprings of Hasidus to be allowed to flood the entire world and prepare the world for Mashiach. So it's a very special day, considered a big Yom Tov. Friday night, we are having a special Hasidic gathering. That's 9 o'clock here at Mayon Yisrael. That is for all men. This event is going to be for men only. Friday night over here at Mayon, we're going to have singing and stories and lots of inspirational thoughts and ideas given over by many people. It's going to be a very, very beautiful event. So please come and tell your friends here at Mayon at 9 o'clock, going on for a nice couple of hours this coming Friday night. Before we begin the class, just a few announcements of the sponsors of this week. First, we have the CD sponsor. This week was by the Leance family, and this is in honor of Jody Leance's birthday, whose birthday is tonight, Tez Zayin Kislev. May she have a wonderful, wonderful, good year, Shnas Bracha Natzlacha, with lots of prosperity and health and goodness and all kinds of bracha, both in the material and in the spiritual, and a lot of nachas from all the children and the family. Thank you so much for that dedication. Another dedication this week was by my good friend David Feldman from Chicago. This is in honor of his mother's, Aleha HaShalom's Yahrzeit, Eliza Bashlomo, whose Yahrzeit is going to be on Sunday on the 21st of Kislev. May her neshama be elevated to the greatest of heights and channel lots of blessings to you, David, and your family, to you, to your wife, Meryl, and everyone. Lots of bracha in everything. Another dedication was by the Davidov family, by Moshe and Esther Davidov. This is in honor of Esther's father's Yahrzeit, which is coming out on Friday on Yutes Kislev, a special day. Aaron ben Baruch, may his neshama be elevated higher and higher and higher and channel lots of blessings to you and your family, nachas from the children and only good, and all kinds of brachas. Another dedication was by Shelley and Shirley Perlis, and this is in honor of Shelley's father's Yahrzeit, which was last week, Thursday, the 11th of Kislev, Yitzchak ben Shloima, may his neshama be elevated and to very, very great heights in the merit of this year, and lots of bracha to you and to your family. This is his first Yahrzeit, so a very special Yahrzeit. This should be a big schus for his neshama. The shir was also dedicated this time for a birthday by Jeff Grunfeld. This is in honor of his brother Aaron Dov's birthday today. On the 16th of Kislev, and his wedding anniversary, which was today, the 15th of Kislev. So these are very good days for him. May this continue to be a days of bracha, ad meo ve'esrim, till 120, with gesund and happiness, and lots of mazel and lots of bracha to you. Thank you so much. And now, last but not least, a last dedication came in just minutes before the shir. This is by the Elyash Mereni family, by Rachamim, and his wonderful family. This is in honor of a Yahrzeit of a grandfather, Mula Baba Ben Chabakuk, Ben Nisani. His Yahrzeit is going to be also this Friday, on that auspicious day of the 19th of Kislev. May his neshama be elevated, and lots of bracha for the family, and everything that they need, Shidduchim, and the wonderful, wonderful good in all aspects, in every aspect. And only bracha. Thank you so much for all those who dedicate. This week's parasha is Parashas Vayeshev. We read about the story. Yaakov Avinu finally comes back from the house of Lavan after he's been in exile for close to 20 years, and now he's coming back. He has gone through a very tumultuous journey, with a lot of challenge, a lot of difficulty, and he has, in these 22 years, he has proven his depth of his, of the strength of his spirituality, of his neshama, the strength of his soul. He has remained a man of incredible integrity and morality, despite the fact that he was faced with, and he was in an environment which was conducive for the opposite. And Yaakov had emerged from that very, very, very dangerous place, complete, as we learned last week, Vayava Yaakov Shalem, that Yaakov arrived complete, whole in his spiritual self, wholesome in his physically he was returned unharmed. That was that challenge. Then on the way back he had the challenge of Esav on the way, and the Malach of Esav which fought him with all the power, all the satanic forces. And Yaakov managed, as we learned last week, Kisarisam Elokim, you have mastered over godly forces, angelic forces, and you have overpowered them. So we would expect after, and then we had the story of Dina that we discussed last week, so we'd expect that after all this difficulty, it's finally time for Yaakov Avinu to relax a little bit, to enjoy his good fortune, his family, his children, and to have menuchas hanefesh, to have the calmness of soul, what we call our chavas adas, the broadness of mind, to be able to raise his family, to educate his children, and to build the Jewish people. This is, after all, the foundation of Am Yisrael, the Jewish people. We understand how much it would take to really be able to, and how much Yaakov wanted to invest in raising his children. And this would have been the perfect time. He's now finally back in his father's home. Hashem had fulfilled the promise to him that Yaakov had set Hashem a condition, V'shafti el b'shalem, I will return in peace, el beis avi, to my father's house. Now is when Yaakov finally comes back to Chevron, in the end of last week's parasha, to his father's house. And this is where the Torah begins, with Vayeshev Yaakov, that Yaakov lives, be'eretz megurei aviv, in the land of where his father has lived. He's back home. So now it's time to be able to focus and to live a peaceful life. And yet the Torah goes on to describe something horrific that happened in Yaakov's life. His entire world was shattered. Everything was crushed. It all came collapsing down. And Yaakov goes through the most horrific and painful experience in his life. He thought he lost Yosef for good. The Torah tells us the sale of Yosef, his most beloved son, the apple of his eye. This was the crown jewel of his family, in which he saw his entire future was all in Yosef, was so maliciously taken away from him. And not only did he lose Yosef, or think that he lost Yosef, but in his back of his mind, he has the lingering thought, two things. First of all, that it's his fault, because of the jealousy that he has treated Yosef in a special way, and maybe as a result of that, this is what caused this whole thing to happen. But even worse than that, that his sons, those that were supposed to be the fathers of the Jewish people, he thought that they have murdered their brother. Can you imagine a father, Yaakov Avinu, having to deal with this pain of looking at his children having murdered the brother and the one that he loved so much? And these were supposed to be the foundation of the Jewish people. This is supposed to be the patriarchs of the Jewish people, the heads of the tribes. And he was, his entire life, this was what his life was all about. That he was going to complete what his father and grandfather had set the stage. They began laying the foundation. And Yaakov was going to build the complete structure. And he finally has his family. He finally makes it. He fought so hard, so difficult, so many challenges. And he made it out finally safely. And he has his family. He's educating them and developing them. And he's in the land of Eretz Yisrael. Everything is wonderful. And then, trach, the whole thing, bang, comes falling down on Yaakov's face. And He enters into a period of deep mourning and sorrow. We can't imagine that pain. And basically, his entire life work is in vain. And whatever has been built by his father and grandfather just is completely destroyed. This is terrible. In the end, it all turned out for the good. But for Yaakov, this was Gehenna. This was hell on earth. This period of the next... The Shekhinah departed him. God left him because of the deep sorrow and the deep pain that he was in. That he was suffering. He was, in a sense, in a depression. Very, very sad state. And you wonder, why did this happen to Yaakov? Why did Yaakov deserve this? Doesn't a man, Hashem's beloved, the one cherished, the greatest of all people, the Bechir Sheba Avos, the chosen of all the fathers, doesn't he deserve a little better? Immediately after he has displayed such loyalty, such devotion, such righteousness, such holiness, such dedication to God, and he finally can eat from the fruits of his labor, and then everything is destroyed. What did Yaakov deserve? What did Yaakov do to deserve this? So we try to figure it out, and of course the simple explanation is that, you know, the Jewish people needed to move into the next stage. The exile needed to happen. We find later in the parasha that it says that Yaakov sent Yosef to go see how the brothers are doing. It says, Vayishalcheyo me'emek Chevron, he sent him from the valley of Chevron, and Rashi asked the question, Chevron is not on a valley, Chevron is on a mountain. Why does it say that he sent him from the valley of Chevron? So Rashi says it means from the deep, the word emek comes from the word depth, from the deep plan, the mysterious plan, Eitza Hamuka, from the deep plan that Hashem had, like to bring about the next stage of the Jewish people, to bring about the exile, and as a result of the exile, Yetzias Mitzrayim, the giving of the Torah, to move the world ahead. Right? So this is the plan, that's why this had to happen. But that only explains why Yosef had to go down to Mitzrayim. But it doesn't explain why Yaakov had to suffer so much. Hashem could have made this whole thing happen without Yaakov suffering. There are many ways that the Jewish people can get down to Egypt. Hashem could have commanded Yaakov, go down to Mitzrayim. That's number one. There are many other ways that Hashem could have orchestrated that Yaakov should get down to Mitzrayim. Now, indeed, a couple of years ago, we gave a class called The Prince in Galus, A Prince in Exile, which is a very special class worth listening to if you haven't heard it, in regards to why the Jewish people went down to Egypt, Dafka, through the sale of Yosef, that Yosef had to be sold as an Eved. True. So even if we say that needs to happen, that the brothers, and that not only that Yosef had to be sold, but he had to be sold by the brothers, Hashem could have also, even that, done it in a way that Yaakov shouldn't suffer that much. Hashem could have revealed to him what happened, that the brothers sold him, and told Hashem, and told him, don't worry, I don't want you to let it all unfold. What would have happened if Yaakov would have known about it? At least he would have saved him this terrible pain that he knows that Yosef, at least he would have known that Yosef is alive, and good things are going to come out of it. And even when I try to answer that Yaakov had to be punished, we say that there was that part of the separation was because, Rashi says earlier, because Yaakov went away from his family for 22 years, and he didn't honor his father. He didn't fulfill the mitzvah of kibud av v'aim. And even though it's a whole question, it's not his fault. I mean, it wasn't, circumstances made it that he had to be far from him, but still, there was a complaint against him, and that's why, just like he was separated from his father for 22 years, Hashem punished him that Yosef was taken away from him also for 22 years. But even in that case, even if Yosef had to go away from him for 22 years, that too could have happened without putting Yaakov through this agony and this deep emotional and mental torment that he was going through, the indescribable pain that Yaakov went through for 22 years. Because the same way that Yaakov left Rivka wasn't either happy of leaving Yaakov, but she knew she had sent him off and she missed him very much. But that was it. But she didn't go through that pain because she knew at least where Yaakov was. So the same thing could have happened. Even if Yosef had to be separated from him, and there would be payback for him being away from his parents for 22 years. So then again, it could have been done in a way that Yaakov knows that Yosef is going to be away, where he is. And okay, so he can't speak to him, he can't see him. That would have been painful enough. But to put Yaakov through this Gehenna, this purgatory, where he sees complete, he's falling into the abyss, total darkness,
Because everything, his life has ended, crash. Everything he has worked for, everything he has done is gone. All went poof. We can't imagine this pain. Why? So Rashi gives us a little insight. Rashi tells us a little Rashi, which is really more problematic than he answers. And it seems to want. Rashi says that this suffering of Yaakov came about, seemingly the way we understand the Rashi, at least at first glance, as a punishment to Yaakov for something that he did. What did Yaakov do so terrible? So Rashi says over here, it's in Pasuk Beis, V'oid nidrash boy, there's another drush over here. Vayeshev. It says in the first word of the parasha is Vayeshev, Yaakov settled down. Bikesh Yaakov leishev b'shalva. Yaakov wanted to sit in peace. Yaakov wanted to sit in tranquility. Kafetz olav rugzei shel Yosef. It pounced upon him, the anger, the rage of Yosef. What was the terrible thing that Yaakov did? Yaakov was seeking peace and tranquility. He wanted to relax. He wanted to have a little calmness in his life. So what happens? No. Kafetz olav rugzei shel Yosef. The rage, the anger of Yosef, this whole story suddenly pounced upon Yaakov. And Rashi continues. Tzadikim mevakshim leishev b'shalva. Tzadikim seek to sit in peace. Tzadikim want peace and tranquility. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God says, Loi dayan letzadikim, it isn't enough for the righteous, for the saintly, mashem esukim lem le'olam haba, that which is prepared for them for the world to come, elushem mevakshim leishev b'shalva, they want to sit in peace, ba'olam hazeh, in this world, you're asking too much, Hashem says. And therefore, seemingly from Rashi, God does not grant it for tzaddikim because they're asking too much. Instead, what does he do with Yaakov? He gives him hell on earth. Why? Because what did he do? He wanted to sit with menucha. He wanted a little peace. Bikesh Yaakov leisha b'shalva. He wanted to sit in peace and tranquility. So Hashem brought upon this whole story of Yosef, and this suffering came about as a result of Yaakov's request to sit in peace. What do we walk away with from this Rashi? What kind of God is this? Like, why, the Eibishter doesn't, can't, you say in Yiddish, he says the word infaginer. He's not, he can't, there's no word for that in, I don't know, I never word for it in English. He's a stingy God. Yaakov wants a little peace, and so Hashem has given him reward in the world to come. So if he wants a little bit menucha in this world, he can't have a little menucha sanefesh, a little calmness in life over here. Well, what's wrong? So Mefarshim have a hard time saying, and what did Yaakov, what's wrong with his request? So he wants peace. What's wrong with that? It's a sin to want peace. So the Mefarshim explain, the Akedah, one of the early common philosophers, the Akedah, and so to the Kli Yakar, and our the Arachayim, and others, their explanation is that we know that there are two worlds. There is Olam Hazeh, there is this world, and there's Olam Haba, there's world to come. This world is the physical, material world. And this is the life in this world. Here's the place of action. Here's the place of work. Here's where we have to learn Torah and do mitzvahs. And then, it says, Hayom lasosam, today is a time of work. And tomorrow is a time of reward. So the reward is going to be in Olam Haba. Now, even though there are pleasurable things in this world, there are delightful things in this world, there are many things that are and extremely pleasurable and delightful, and people are always pursuing pleasure in this world, but it's not meant to be so. A person who's focused doesn't do that. Because the pleasures that there are in this world are mainly just a distraction. They're distracting us because the value of all these pleasures are really just tiny little crumbs of crumbs. This is not true pleasure. In our world, because we don't know of anything better, because we're living in this constriction of the physical, of our physical, and our vision is very confined. So to us it looks like, wow, this is awesome. This is really incredible delight and pleasure. But really, in the greater scope of things, the pleasure of this world are a joke. It's just a tiny, it's a crumb of the true bliss and ecstasy that there is in the heavenly spheres. As the sages tell us in Pirkei Avos, Yafesha Achas, one moment or 1 hour, Olam Haba, in the pleasures of the world to come, is more than the entire pleasure, Mikol Chaye Olam Hazeh, than all the delight and all the pleasure. If you were able to add up every sensation from every human being, from the day Adam HaRishon was in the world, when Adam was created, until today, count every bit of pleasure. Add, I don't know how you measure pleasure, but get every sensation and every pleasure from every experience that every person ever had, whether it's pleasure coming from music, from sights, from food, from whatever, any kind of pleasure that there is in the world. If we gather all that pleasure together, it would be nothing in comparison to 1 hour of pleasure in the world to come. Because it's so much, the pleasure is so much of a higher value, so much far more powerful. And the Mishnah tells us in Pirkei Avos that ha'olam hazeh domer leprozdar, that this world is compared to a hallway, and olam haba, and the world to come, is compared letraklin. Traklin means a ballroom. And this room, and this world, is like the waiting room, or the entrance, the hallway in which we are in the way into letraklin, into the ballroom. Haskein atzmacha beprozdar, prepare yourself in this world's a time of preparation. Here's where we make ourselves ready. We dress ourselves in the garments that we should be ready. We dress ourselves like you dress yourself for the wedding. We have to put on mitzvahs and ma'asim tovim. These are the garments in which we need. Kedei shetikanes letraklin, so that you will be able to enter into the palace. And that has always been the Jewish way of life. The righteous people of tzaddikim, and in general, you know, Jews had always their understanding that the material things of this world is not where it's at. We go through life. Of course, we have some enjoyments and some pleasures over here, but that's not our focus. Our focus is mitzvahs and ma'asim tovim, good deeds, because the real, true world of delight and the world of pleasure is the world to come. There's a beautiful story. This Friday is the yard site of the Holy Maggid, of the Mizritcha Maggid we mentioned earlier, the chief disciple of the Holy Baal Shem Tov, that the Baal Shem Tov once had a Jew come see him. A person came to visit the Baal Shem Tov, and the Baal Shem Tov asked him where he's from, and he said he is from the city of Mezrich, from the town of Mezrich. So the Baal Shem Tov said, I have a student over there, his name is Reber. Please do me a favor, when you go back to Mezrich, please send him my regards, give him my personal regards. So he was very happy to be a shliach from the Baal Shem Tov, to go give regards to the Baal Shem Tov student. So he traveled to the city. So when he came back home and he came to Mizritch, he went and he looked up. He didn't know him, but then he found out that this is the one. Reber lives in the corner, in the back of the town, in the rundown area of the town. So he comes to that place and he sees and he knocks on the door and he wants to speak and give over. He's excited to give over the regards. And when the door opens up, he sees a man, you know, and he has a shining face. He sees he's a very special person. And the man invites him in. The Maggid, Mizritcha Maggid, invite him. At that time, the Mizritcha Maggid wasn't known as a tzaddik at all. He was a malamed. He was a rebbe. He was a children's teacher. So he brings him in into his little house. And he looks around, and he's horrified by the poverty. I mean, extreme poverty that was in the Maggid's house. There was literally nothing there. Even the most basic furniture they didn't have. All they had was a few planks of wood, and they would make and they would use the wood constantly. They would be readjusting the wood for different. They would make makeshift furniture. When it came time to eat, they laid out the furniture on two rocks, and it was a bench, and they made a makeshift table. When it came time to go to sleep, they picked up the table and they put it on the ground, and that became the beds. And then it was the basic necessities, basic life, the furnishings that a person needs to live, they didn't have. So he felt very, he couldn't bear it. So he turns to the Maggid, he gives him over the regards, and then he says to him, he says, I don't understand. He says, how can you live this way? How can you live this way? I'm also not a wealthy man. I'm also a simple person. But at least I have basic furnishings. I have tables, I have beds, I have cabinets, I have the basic things that a person needs to live in. But you have nothing, and he can, you know, and I'm sure if you would ask the community, you know, to give you a raise, they would take care of you. You can't, it's not, a person shouldn't live this way. So the Maggid says to him, so I don't understand, so where's your furniture? So he looks at him, what do you mean, where's my furniture? It's in my house. He says, no, but I don't see your furniture now. He says, yeah, because I'm not in my home. I'm traveling, I'm going, I should schlep my furniture wherever I go. So the Maggid says, oh, that was the way you're asking. He says, by me in my home, I also have all the furniture. I have everything that I need, but on the road, I don't need it. That's the way Jews saw life. this world is on the road. On the road, you don't need it. At home, you need it. So therefore, they say that when the Magid, that when Yaakov Avinu, Bikish Yaakov Leishiv B'Shalva, that Yaakov wanted to sit in peace, was the sin that Yaakov did was that he gave importance to this world. He wanted to sit in peace. That means he wanted to live a comfortable life. Which means instead of recognizing and understanding that the world to come is where the true comfort and the real delight and the real pleasure is, Yaakov was looking to have comfortable life in this world. Leishei b'shalva. Which means he was taking the traklin, he was taking, in the words of the Akedah, he was taking the palace, which is supposed to be the world to come, and he was seeing this world as already the end, the destination. This is not just a passageway to a higher place, but this itself is already my main residence. And that's why he was seeking comfort in this world. And that's why the Kli Yakar says, that's the hinted to in the words of the Pasuk, Vayeshev Yaakov, that Yaakov is settling in this world. He's sitting here, he wants to sit here like as if he's a resident. A Jew is supposed to feel that my passing through this world is only like a ger. A ger meaning like someone he's a guest. It's not. And the complaint against Yaakov, according to these Mefarshim, is that they say, the Pasuk is saying, Vayeshev Yaakov, Yaakov wanted to live in a very settled way in this world, Be'eretz, in the land, Megure Aviv, where his parents, his father Yitzchak, did not see it that way. Yitzchak lived in this world like a ger meaning like someone, like a visitor. Hashem told Yitzchak, Gur Be'eretz Azos, live temporarily in this land. And when Yitzchak lived temporarily, even though it says that about the land of Plishtim, which was not his home, we might argue and say that when Yitzchak came back home, outside of the land of the Philistines, outside of Plishtim, when Yitzchak went back home to the land of Eretz Yisrael, since this was the promised land which was going to be his, maybe he did build himself a palace. And maybe he did live comfortably. So the Pasuk emphasizes, no. Be'eretz, in the land, Migure Aviv, where his father lived temporarily, Be'eretz Canaan. That even though it was the land of Canaan, even though it was the promised land that God had given him, Yitzchak never felt that this is his place. He felt like the Magid, that he's just passing through. This is just a journey. This is a short, temporary place. It doesn't have to be too fancy. I just need to have basic necessities, but not make a big deal about it. But Yaakov didn't want that. Vayeshev Yaakov. Yaakov is settling down in a permanent way. And that's why, for that, God punished him. That is the explanation of some Mefarshim, the Mefarshim on the Medrash, the Yafei Toar, as we said, the Akedah, the Kli Yakar, say that this was, he made too much of this world, wanting the peace, wanting the comfort of the physical world. The problem is two things. First of all, if this was Yaakov's crime, if this was such a terrible thing, and this is what really happened, so then the punishment, first of all, should have come immediately. We see that the punishment did not come immediately, because Yosef was sold 9 years after Yaakov came to the land of Canaan. Okay, because Yosef was sold when he was 17 years old, the Pasuk says, when Yosef was sold as a slave. When did Yaakov come and settle down in Hebron? Well, let's see. Yaakov ran away, left Lavan's house when Yosef was 6 years old. Because when Yosef was born, that's when Yaakov tells Lavan, let me go back home. And Lavan says, don't go yet, I have to pay you. And Yaakov said, okay. And 6 years he works in the sheep. So Yosef is 6 years old during the chase. When Lavan chases Yaakov, Yaakov runs away, Yosef is 6 years old. 2 years it took Yaakov to finally come back to Hebron. He spent 2 years on the road. So Yosef is 8 years old. When he was sold, Yosef was 17. That means there's a 9-year difference. So what happened during those 9 years? Seems like Yaakov lived a very comfortable life during that time. There was no problem. There was no this, that. So if this is a punishment for Yaakov wanting to make a big deal about Gashmias, of the physical world, the material world, why wasn't he punished immediately? Why did it take 9 years? Just a side question. But the main question is, there are far, far lesser tzaddikim than Yaakov that had their priorities straight, that knew that this world, the material world, is a very temporary state. How can we say about Yaakov Avinu, the Bechir Sheva Aves, he's the greatest of our fathers, that he really cared and he wanted to have a pleasurable, delightful physical life? Doesn't make any sense. We know that Yaakov, the Aves, what does it say about the Aves? The Avos were so pure, they were so holy, they're the Merkava. They're Avos, Heina Merkava. They are a vehicle for God. What does it mean to be a vehicle? So the Tanya says a vehicle means Shekol Avareyam, all their limbs. I'm not quoting exactly the words, but it's something like it. Shekol Avareyam, all their limbs. Hayakadoshim Umuvdalim in Yana Olam Hazeh. Their all their limbs were holy and separated from worldly matters. Well, what does it mean a vehicle? A vehicle means that your entire business is to be a conduit for the rider, for someone to take you, right? For someone to, for the whoever is riding you. You're just serving them. Yaakov's and Avram, Yitzhak and Yaakov, their bodies were a conduit for God, which means it was they had no other identity but being the executors of the divine will in this world. That's what their life is all about. So obviously Yaakov is not a materialistic person. So to say about, to accuse Yaakov and say that he wanted enjoyment, what did Yaakov want? He wanted to go live in a retirement home and lay on a beach chair next to the pool and drink martini? What am I crazy? This is obviously not Yaakov's desire. So what is Yaakov desiring? So obviously we have to say that when Yaakov wants Bikesh Leshev Bishalov, he wants to sit in peace. We're not talking about a blissful material state. But rather, Yaakov is looking at, similar to when in the time of Olam Haba, or Tchias HaMesim, time of the resurrection, it says Olam Haba, that time, even though it's a physical existence, the Rambam says, there's not a time of eating, it's not a time of drinking. Rather, Tzadikim Yoshvim, Tzadikim Sit, V'nehenin Miziv HaShchina, and they delight from the radiance of the Shechina. Which means it's a purely spiritual state of delight. So when it says that Yaakov was finally wanting, he desired to have a peaceful, tranquil existence, a pleasant time, what did Yaakov want? He wanted lachsoiz b'noyam Hashem. He wanted to see in the pleasantness of God, in the sweetness of Hashem. That's his desire. He wanted the experience of Olam Haba. Obviously, you have to say that. But if that's the case, if that's all that Yaakov wanted, was that he should be able to live undisturbed and enjoying the spiritual delights as Hashem basking in God's light, like it's going to be in the future time, in the days of Mashiach, and the days of Tchias HaMesim, if that's what Yaakov wants, then why is Hashem so upset about it? Why is that such a sin that Yaakov deserves that he should have this calamity of Yosef pounce upon him? Why did this happen to him as a result of it? So we can answer and say that even that, to have a desire, for Yaakov to have a desire, to spend the rest of his days on earth in a state of enjoying, in a state of the pleasantness, the enjoyment, enjoying the spiritual rewards, that too is inappropriate. Why is it inappropriate? Because that goes against the grain of what our lives are on earth. Our life on earth is about avoda. It's about serving. We said earlier, Hayom la'asoysam, today, Chazal say, today in this life is a life of work. L'machar, tomorrow, in the afterlife, or after Mashiach, after the resurrection, that's a time for reward. This entire stay on earth, when the soul comes into a body, this incarnation on earth is purely for the doing of mitzvahs. And therefore, we can say that even this, to want to live in a retirement state. In other words, I'm stopping, no work is over. And now it's just reward time. Let me enjoy. Let it be the most spiritual, sublime delights. Even if it's that, it's still inappropriate. That's not what your life is about. Your life is avodas Hashem, serving Hashem. Work. This is Adam la'amol yulad. A person was created to toil, not for retirement. So therefore, this would be the inappropriateness of Yaakov's request. But again, it's hard to believe that Yaakov would have made that mistake, because that's not a little mistake. That is a major. That's a major. But it's wrong. The whole attitude doesn't fit. It's not the right way, because it changes one's entire approach to life. It's saying this is a fundamental. It's a fundamental problem, because if you want to enjoy life, Especially we know, Chazal say even more than that. Al tihiu kavadim amisham shemesarav. Do not be like servants who serve their master amanas lekabel paras to receive a reward. Which means like this. When we're serving Hashem, our service is supposed to be clean, without any ulterior motive. Even to think about the reward of Olam Haba, which is a very spiritual enjoyment, which is a spiritual pleasure, even that it takes away from the purity of one's service. So if a person is not supposed to serve Hashem for anything, even with the intentions of Olam Haba, but rather our service is supposed to be pure, as the Rambam says, do the MS because it's MS. Do it because it's true. Serve Hashem out of love because you want to give a nachas ruach to Hashem. That means that it's incorrect to serve Hashem now in this world thinking about the reward you're going to get even in the afterlife. Even that is considered shalol lishma. So definitely, for Yaakov Avinu to want to be rewarded and have that pleasure already in this life was definitely out of place. So it would be difficult to conceive that even that Yaakov can make a mistake and have that be his desire. So therefore we have to say that his mistake was to be subtler than that. Couldn't have been that he wants just pure schar. He wants reward. He's done with his work. I'm done. Finished. I'm ready for reward. We can't say that is, I mean, obviously, you know, if he's still alive, every moment that we're here, ani nivresi, I was created, the Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos, the Mishnah says in Masechtas Kedushin, ani nivresi, I was created, l'shamesh es koni, to serve my Creator. So every moment, every breath that we breathe, as long as we're alive, we just have to serve our Creator. So of course Yaakov knows that. So therefore let's try to perhaps give a third explanation. What really was Yaakov wanting when it says Yaakov wants to sit b'shalva? What Yaakov wanted was not to retire. Work is over. What Yaakov wanted was to be able to serve Hashem without interference. Yaakov wanted the peace and tranquility that the Rambam speaks of is the tranquility that characterizes the days of Mashiach. See, the days of Mashiach is an interesting time. The days of Mashiach is a time in which we haven't yet retired from our service. The Jewish people as a people during the time of Mashiach are still going to continue studying Torah and doing mitzvahs. Quite on the contrary, the main performance of mitzvahs is going to be after Mashiach comes. We as a people did never have a chance to do all the 613 until Mashiach comes. So really, Mashiach's coming is going to be the time when the stage is set that we can serve Hashem with perfection. But what is going to be so special about that time? So the Rambam says, what's special about it is that we're not going to have all the distractions that characterize our lives in these days. In these days, we have all kinds of difficulties and all kinds of obstacles that the problems that come in life, and all these problems interfere and do not allow us the calmness of mind, the concentration. We can't concentrate in prayer that we're supposed to. We can't do the mitzvah with our full heart and soul, with all of our love and fear, because our soul is squandered. Our soul, we're exhausted. Our emotions are drained. Our mind is confused because there's so many stuff happening. There's such bewilderment because it's so hard to earn a living. It's so hard to just live. There's so much turmoil in our lives. So the Rambam says when the Mashiach is going to come, God is going to clear away all those obstacles and we're going to be able to serve Hashem without interference. So what's the point of Yemos HaMashiach? It's not reward. Reward is going to be after the resurrection of the dead, after Tchias HaMeisim, which is a later stage. That's called Olam Haba. Yemos HaMashiach is a time of serving God, serving Hashem without interferences. What we have today. So that is what Yaakov wanted. He didn't want reward. It's not what he was looking for. He wanted shalva so that he can study Torah, daven, do mitzvahs, raise his family with his full caring and devotion without having the obstacles that he had to now. He was in Lavan's house. He had to fight off the negative influences coming from Lavan and from all the Haranites. When he was worried with Esau, he had to protect against the forces of evil. Now he had rid the world already. He cleared some space. Now, over there in this space, he wants to serve Hashem without the obstacles, without the difficulty. If that's the case, then we have to wonder, so what's wrong with that? On that we said, so now it makes sense that that's what Yaakov wants. But then on the other hand, so what's wrong with that? Why is Hashem upset about Yaakov and punishing him and giving him such a punishment like the pain and the suffering that he had from Mechiras Yosef? And even more, why doesn't Hashem grant him his wish? Not only doesn't that deserve a punishment, that's the most beautiful wish someone can ask for. If we're davening, Hashem wants us to daven for our needs. Imagine if we can purify our needs and purify our desires so much that the only thing we want, Acha sha'alti me'eis Hashem, like King David says, David HaMelech says, the only thing I want is to be able to Shifti beveis Hashem kol yemei chayei. I should be able to sit in your house and get close to you, Hashem. Study your Torah, learn, do mitzvahs, connect to you. That's all I want. So if, imagine if we're requesting, please Hashem, allow us to do that. Is something wrong with that prayer? That's a beautiful prayer. Of course Hashem should answer our prayer, especially a tzaddik like Yaakov. Not punish him for that. And the answer is we're reading the Rashi wrong, like we've done so many times. The whole thing we're understanding is wrong. It never says over here that Hashem is punishing Yaakov. It's not a punishment. Two things we're reading wrong. We're reading wrong this Rashi, and for generations, people read, I mean, we read this, we understand it wrong. Chassidus comes and gives us such insight. Because we read the Rashi as general, and most people take this Rashi. Two things. Yaakov sinned. Bikesh Yaakov leisha b'shalva. Yaakov did an avera. That he wants to sit in peace. And the other thing is that Hashem is punishing for it and giving him the suffering of it. Rashi doesn't say that. Yaakov never did an avera. Yaakov's desire was the purest desire. The Rambam says we're supposed to want Mashiach for this reason. The Rambam says wise men, intelligent people wanted Mashiach. Not that they can rule the world. Not that the Jews should rule the world and we should have power. The Rambam says that's ridiculous. That's childish. Why did Jews want Mashiach all the time? They should be penuyim, they should be free from all kinds of obstacles, from all kinds of difficulties, and serve Hashem without the distraction. So Yaakov's desire is a pure desire, and he's not sinning. There's nothing wrong with the desire. Kafetz Alav Rugzo Shal Yosef is not a punishment. When Hashem brings upon Yaakov this whole saga, this whole terrible story of Yosef, it's not punishing Yaakov for a sin that he's done, because he didn't sin. Quite on the contrary, as we see, Hashem is answering his prayer and giving him what he wanted. Yaakov wants to sit in peace. Hashem is saying, okay, if you want that, I will give that to you. But then this is what is needed in order to get there. Because what does Hashem say? What does Hashem say? Because in another indication from Rashi, which is clear, that Yaakov isn't sinning over here. We're not dealing with something wrong. Rashi continues and Rashi says, in the same breath, tzaddikim, hear this, Rashi says, tzaddikim mevakshim leishev b'shalva, tzaddikim, this is a request of tzaddikim. Now, obviously, it doesn't say this is one tzaddik. Rashi says, this is the attitude of tzaddikim. Tzaddikim want to sit in peace. So obviously, it can't be that they're looking for physical enjoyments. It can't be that looking for retirement for reward, because tzaddikim are not serving Hashem for reward. If it says tzaddikim evakshim leisha b'shalva, it means to be able to serve Hashem in the best way. If there would be something sinful about this, something wrong, why are the tzaddikim doing it? And Rashi doesn't say, if it happens that a tzaddik does this. Rashi says tzaddikim b'lashon hoyva, all tzaddikim, saying almost every tzaddik has this desire. And hold it, if this was a sin, which Yaakov was punished with the worst kind of a punishment, shouldn't all the later tzaddikim have learned from this and not repeat this sin again? Why are all tzaddikim doing the same sin, repeating the sin? Obviously, it's not a sin. And tzaddikim are not sinners. They're the righteous people. They're the ones we want to emulate. This is a good thing to want to serve Hashem in peace and tranquility. This is a wonderful thing. What then? Why is Hashem not granting it? The answer over here is that Hashem says, it's a good request you're requesting, but it's a bit premature. It's a bit early. What you want is right and good, and I want to give it to you, but it's a little early. It's not enough what I'm giving you in the world to come, but you want it now? Too early for that. What does it mean? What does that mean? You see, in our relationship with Hashem, there's three stages, three levels in our work relationship with Him. We're His servants, and we do service for Him, and in the end, He rewards us. But there are three stages in that. There is a stage of work. There is a stage of reward. The first, there's the beginning level, which is the time of work, the era of work. Then there's an era of reward. And then there's a middle stage, which is a combination of both work and reward at the same time. They both come together. In other words, we might say something like this. There is two levels of work, and there's two levels of reward. There's the basic level of work, the time of extreme labor and work. That's the main work in this world. Then there is a time of utter reward, where the idea is not to work. The idea is to be a recipient. We did for Hashem. Now Hashem wants us to sit back and enjoy His light. And we have to change our mind then. Not to be contributors, but to be recipients. Not that easy sometimes. But we have to be a receiver of the Eibishter's brachas, as God is giving us His light. That's going to be the ultimate time, the time of Olam Haba. But then there is a stage in which we are serving, but it's also a time of reward. And the reward and the serving go together. They're combined together. What is that in terms of, what does that mean? That means something like this. Initially, when Hashem desires us to serve Him, He wants us to serve Him, and the service should be challenging. That means when we are climbing a mountain, the goal is to get to the top of the mountain, but Hashem doesn't just allow us to climb the mountain and make the mountain treacherous. He also has us climb the mountain carrying bags of stones. He puts weights down upon us, making it difficult. That's a life has to be. Why the Eibishter does that, presents us with challenges, it's probably the best for our soul. God, with His infinite wisdom, knows we function the best when we have to fight against obstacles. It brings out the true, deeper potential of the soul as you're fighting to overcome difficulties and challenges. Therefore, work life is treacherous and it has many, many challenges and difficulties. However, once we've completed and reached a certain level, then Hashem wants to help us out and make us, enable us to climb much faster and to reach to greater heights. So what Hashem does is He removes the weights and He removes the stones and He's allowing us to soar. Similar to when you're playing chess, you have the pawns, the simple soldiers, they go one step at a time. Then when they finally get to the other end, you can switch the individual, the pawn, we can turn him into a queen. But the game is not over. We're still playing. But once the queen is a queen, it already falls away all the inhibitions, all the limitations. The queen can move in every direction. So the same is in our lives. First, we have to work. The beginning, everybody has challenges and difficulties. But then, at a certain point, Hashem rewards us. What's the reward? The reward is that now you can serve me without the difficulties and without the challenges. So it's both. It's reward and it is service at the same time. In the overall historical context of the Jewish people, that's the three eras that there are to generalize the entire period, all of time. The first period of time, until Mashiach comes, is the time of avoda, of work. Work in the darkness of exile, the darkness in the concealments of the body, all the difficulties that there are in life, and all the problems in life and challenges, this is all the time of avoda, the first stage, where it's pure work, not reward. Then there is the time of Tchias HaMesim. Tchias HaMesim, Olam Haba, Tzadikim Yoishim, Tzadikim Sit. You're sitting back, you're relaxing. And you're enjoying the Yoishin, you're basking in God's light. It's a time of pure ecstasy and bliss. There's nothing to do. It says, mitzvahs betelus lasad lovay. Mitzvahs are batel. It's not a time of action. It's a time where we're receiving. And then there is a middle time called Yomos HaMashiach. What's Yomos HaMashiach? Yomos HaMashiach was still a time of labor. It's still a time of work. But it's a time where Hashem removes all the obstacles and makes it easy for us to work. So this is avoda, but it is schar at the same time. Hashem, when the tzaddikim, what do they want? What does Yaakov Avinu want? And what did the other tzaddikim want? They want to live already in Mashiach's era. They want to be able to serve Hashem without obstacles because they want so badly to connect to Hashem fully. And it's impossible when you have all this hardship. So they beg and they plead and they're hoping and they daven. Please Hashem, just allow me into the world of Mashiach, so to speak. Give me that tranquility. Hashem says, well, that's a reward. And that reward only comes when you complete entirely your avodah. You have to be completely finished your avodah. You have to have gone through all the challenge and really worked it all through, and then I can give you that reward. So that's what Hashem says to the tzaddikim. It's not a punishment. And if you want it earlier, if you do want it in this world, which means if you want it earlier, then there are certain things that need to take in order for that to happen. For instance, by Yaakov Avinu, it's not that Hashem said, you're bad, you're asking me for this, therefore I'm going to punish you. There's no punishment. Yaakov Avinu in his mind thought, according to his calculation, according to his estimation of himself, knowing the darkness and the difficult challenges that he went through in Lavan's house and in the house of Esav, he thought that he has reached the epitome of what he can reach in his perfection of himself and serving Hashem to the utmost he can serve. And therefore he felt that he was ready for Hashem to move into phase two, to remove the burdens, to remove the difficulties, and unchallenged Yaakov, allow his neshama to soar, allow him to serve Hashem in the Mashiach stage. However, there is where Yaakov made the mistake, because Hashem said, you're not really there yet. And that's why Hashem goes and he brings upon him Rugzei Shel Yosef. See, the pain and the suffering of Yosef was not meant to punish him. It was meant to say to Yaakov, well, you have to serve Hashem and be challenged first. And you have to serve Hashem with all your power and all your ability. This is one last challenge you have to go through. You thought you're there already, but there's one more challenge, one more difficulty, obstacle course that you have to pass. And that is this darkness of Yosef, the challenge, the difficulties that this presented to Yaakov. And when he made it through this, what happened? Hashem gave him his prize. In the end of Yaakov's life, for 17 years, Yaakov lived in the land of Mitzrayim. And what does it say? Vayechi Yaakov, Yaakov lived in the land of Mitzrayim. The Baal HaTurim says that the 17 years that Yaakov lived in Mitzrayim, reunited with his son Yosef, with all of his family, and they had a yeshiva, and they were prosperous, and they were growing, and they were spiritually all connected to Yaakov, and he saw that no one was sinners, finally his family was reunited. Yaakov, the Baal HaTurim says that those were the best years of Yaakov's life. Well, that was Yaakov's wish. Was granted. Hashem gave him 17 years of bracha. Hear the words of the Zohar. The Zohar says about the last 17 years of Yaakov's life. Zohar says, Hashem gave him 17 other years. When he lived in the land of Egypt, with joy, and with honor, and within a state of complete, total perfection. Why? The Brei Yosef have a Malka. His son Yosef was a king. V'chol b'noi kamay heva, they were all tzaddikim. They're all righteous people. And therefore, v'inun shva'es rishnin have chayin legabe. If Yaakov can look for the years of his life where he lived, those 17 years was life. This was Yaakov's Yemoisa Mashiach. The 17 years that he lived in Mitzrayim. So Hashem gave it to him. So when it says Kofetz all of Rugzei Shel Yosef, that it pounced upon him the darkness and the rage of Yosef, this was all to help facilitate his wish for Hashem to grant him what he wants. He needs to go through that challenge to get there. This also answers another very phenomenal question. We didn't ask the question earlier, but I spoke about it last year in the class. How can the parsha be called Vayeshev? What's the name of the parsha? Vayeshev means he settled down. How long does this settling down last? We know the name of a parsha characterizes the entire parsha. This, sitting down means, it's like a person sits down after you've climbed, you've hiked, climbed 10, 15 miles, you're collapsing, you sit down, and Vayeshev Yaakov. Yaakov completed this very, very difficult trek. Vayeshev, he sits down. So when we read the parasha from the name, it's made it very misleading. Because when you come to Parshas Vayeshev, you're ready to sit back and enjoy the parsha, watching Yaakov's life suddenly turn utopian, beautiful. What happens? It lasts for one pasuk. The next pasuk, Eile told us Yaakov Yosef, the entire parsha opens up, as we said earlier, the worst Gehenom in Yaakov's life. So how can the name of the parsha, which is the soul of the parsha, which is the essence of the parsha, called tranquility? The answer is, the entire story of Yosef is because Vayeshev. Yaakov is finally ready. He himself thinks he's there. He's finally ready. And he says to Hashem, please, open up for me the world of Mashiach. Vayeshev, I'm ready to relax. I'm ready to serve you without the obstacles so I don't have all these weights bogging me down, so I can really soar. I can really go deeper and higher. So Hashem helps Yaakov do that. He helps him reach. That's why the whole parsha, again, is not a punishment. The rugzei shel Yosef, the challenge, the difficulty of Yosef, enabled him to reach this point. Hashem realizes of him. It takes a few parshiyos until we get to Parshas Vayechi, when we finally get there. But that's the content of the parsha. It's all Vayeshev. There's only one problem over here. The problem is that we're dealing with a tzaddik whose name is Yaakov. If we were dealing with another tzaddik, it would work, but it doesn't work with Yaakov. The reason it doesn't work with Yaakov is because Yaakov is a midasa emes. There are three patriarchs. Avram is chesed, Yitzhak is gevura might, and Yaakov serves God with the attribute of truth. How can it be that a person who serves God with truth should make such a mistake? He thinks he's there already. He thinks he has accomplished the utmost of accomplishment, and meanwhile, it's not true. The tzaddik who represents truth should not have a true assessment of who he is. Because according to this comes out that Yaakov thought he's there already. That's why he says, hello, I'm here. Bikish Yaakov, Leishe B'shalva. He wants to enter already the days of Mashiach. And Hashem says, no, I got something in store for you in order to get there. There's still some major hurdle. If you want to get there, I will give it to you, but it's going to be difficult, which means Yaakov has a lot to grow. There's a lot of growth that he can still grow. How come Yaakov can make that mistake? It would be difficult about any grand tzaddik that he can make a mistake like this, especially to Yaakov, who represents truth. So the idea is, very briefly, and that is that when Yaakov wanted Leishev B'shalva, Yaakov didn't make a mistake. Yaakov was ready for Mashiach. Yaakov was ready for that peaceful state that we spoke about before. He was there. And because Yaakov was there, that's why Hashem granted it to him. Remember we said earlier there was 9 years in Yaakov's life before the story of Yosef happened? 9 years when Yaakov lived a perfect life in the land of Canaan. He had no trouble, his family was growing up. He didn't see yet the cracks that were beginning to, the fissures that were happening in the family. He didn't really realize it. Everything was still wonderful and was a dreamlike existence. It was beautiful. Well, you know why Yaakov lived in tranquility without any challenge during those 9 years? Because he really deserved it. And Yaakov knew that. That's why Yaakov asked for it. And Hashem gave it to him immediately. Hashem granted him his wish for 9 years. But then, because Hashem loves the tzaddik so much, because Hashem wants to fulfill the desire of the tzaddik to the highest, highest degree, Hashem gave Yaakov Avinu something more, an extra bonus that Yaakov wasn't even asking for. Yaakov wanted to live in the days of Mashiach, and Hashem said, you Yaakov Avinu, I'm going to take you all the way to Tchias HaMesim. I'm going to take you all the way to the world to come. You're looking to live b'shalva, in peace. Which peace? The peace where you can still serve me. As we said earlier, there's a middle stage where you're serving without obstacles. Hashem says to Yaakov, that's good, that you're going to have now for 9 years. But for you, I want to take you on an infinite journey. I want to take you way beyond that. I want to bring you to the world to come. I want to bring you to a time where there's no more work on your part at all. I want you to experience in your physical body a snapshot. I want you to see, I want you to experience a preview of the ultimate state of the Jewish people, of Olam Haba, where you have peace and tranquility beyond avoda, just the ultimate godly bliss that is going to be. So what Hashem is saying to Yaakov, you're asking for one level of shalva. I want to give you even a higher shalva, a higher tranquility, that which you haven't been asking for. For that, however, I'm going to put you through something bigger. In other words, Yaakov was ready for what Yaakov asked for, Hashem gave him. And he was ready for that. But now Hashem gave Yaakov an extra thing that Yaakov didn't ask for. He wasn't even dreaming that Hashem would give that to him. But Hashem did bring Yaakov to that, and that's the 17 years that Yaakov lived in Mitzrayim. See, there's two periods of tranquility in Yaakov's life. 9 years in the land of Canaan, and 17 years in the land of Mitzrayim. The difference between the two is the 9 years in the Eretz Canaan, that's reflecting the days of Mashiach. The 17 years he lived in Eretz Mitzrayim is reflecting Olam Haba, the perfect state. It's a different kind of reward. And what's the difference between the two? One of them is a peace and tranquility that is conceivable and that is attainable by a human being. You work very, very, very hard. You work to the perfection. You can earn as a reward. You can earn that peace. Mashiach is something that can come as a reward, not just as a reward. Mashiach can come as the realization of what we're working for. We can produce the world of Mashiach. The world of Olam Haba that comes after Mashiach in the time of Tchias HaMeisim is something that human beings can't accomplish. We can't do that. That is something that Hashem has to take us to. As a child, we can accomplish, we can build. A certain point, we just have to jump onto our daddy's back, onto Hashem, and Hashem has to carry us into an utterly godly utopian existence. And that's why we see an interesting difference between the 9 years of Yaakov's life in Eretz Yisrael that were peaceful and 17 years in Mitzrayim. And that the 17 years in Mitzrayim, we see they were completely miraculous tranquility. It's a miraculous tranquility. In the land of Canaan, Yaakov is living tranquil, but it's a natural tranquility. Why? Where do you see that this is natural and this is miraculous? This is human tranquility, creation tranquility, and this is divine tranquility. Simple thing. See, it makes sense to us that when Yaakov is living in the land of Canaan, he can live in a tranquil state. After all, he's living in the land of, and it's a holy land. Eretz Yisrael is a holy land. Avram and Yitzchak have already cleared the space. They've already made people the environment holy. They made the people know Hashem to a certain degree. So this is conducive for holiness. So here it makes sense that Yaakov should live without any problem. The last 17 years when Yaakov is living in Mitzrayim, it doesn't make any sense. Mitzrayim is the place that eventually is going to turn out to be the most anti-Semitic, the most horrific, the worst exile for the Jewish people. Physically, the most brutal exile. It says Mitzrayim was worse than all the exiles, the suffering that the Jewish people had in Egypt. But aside from that, in terms of spiritual darkness, Mitzrayim is called Erev HaSa'aretz, the nakedness of the land, the lowliest, the darkest, the most immoral, deep, the lowliest, most corrupted society. How can it be that Yaakov moves with his family into the darkest, into a place, into Las Vegas? Imagine that. Yaakov moves with his family and over there, he lives a life of ecstasy, of bliss, spiritual growth, spiritual delight. Him and his family are in the highest spiritual attainment possible. That's miraculous. That's godly. That's utterly godly. That doesn't make any sense. The Zohar, see what the Zohar says, what kind of life. See, it wasn't only physically Yaakov lived a good life. The Zohar says, there's a different Zohar. I mentioned before one Zohar. There's another Zohar, where the words of the Zohar is, V'yosef halach shva es reshon en achronin. This is in Vayechi. Here is another 17 years. Be'inugin, with delight. V'safnukin, and pleasure. V'hanois, and another word for delight. V'kisufim, and longing. The Zohar is describing such ecstasy and bliss, spiritual ecstasy and bliss, because this was completely Olam Haba. This experience of the last 17 was Olam Haba. But as we said earlier, with human toil and human effort, we can't reach it. God has to bring us to that place. And that's what happened in Yaakov's life. You see, when Hashem wanted to give Yaakov, fulfill his wish, and give him this blessing that is beyond what he even asked for, and even what he anticipated, what's even beyond that. Hashem brought Yaakov into the pain. See, as we said earlier, what purifies us? What opens us up? What makes us into a vessel? When we serve Hashem, and primarily when we serve Hashem in a challenged situation, when we serve Hashem through difficulty and challenge, that's the work, the fighting, and the That's a zichuch, that's a purification. It opens us up and it makes us into a vessel. But there's two types, and that's where this new phase of Yaakov's life that was going to happen now brought the challenge and the difficulty of Yaakov to a whole new level. A place where Yaakov has never gone through. Such difficulty, a whole new level. You see, it's not only that this story was worse. There was more pain here. It was on a whole different scale. Qualitatively, the suffering was on a whole different level. Let's see the main difference between Yaakov's suffering in these 22 years and all the suffering Yaakov had in Lavan, Esav, all that darkness that he had earlier. It's a main difference. You see, when someone is suffering and they go through difficult times, but they can see the benefits of what they're going through. They understand, like, I'm going through this and this, but this is helping me grow. See, when Yaakov went down to the house of Lavan, what was he doing? He was challenged. He was in a very unholy environment. He was by his uncle Lavan, who was a deceiver, a liar, an immoral person. And Yaakov had to remain an honest, good person, even though he was living in such corruption for such a long time. And he had to raise his family in the midst of all that klipa, in the midst of all that darkness. So Yaakov is working. He doesn't sleep. For 20 years, he doesn't go to sleep. He has to be so vigilant. It's so difficult, so hard. But every day that his family doesn't succumb, every day that he's growing, every day he's fighting the klipa, he realizes how strong he's getting, how powerful his neshama is becoming, so much more than it was before, because he's building spiritual muscles. He realizes this. He's creating a very strong, mighty people. So there is an understanding. I'm gaining something from this hardship. I realize. It's like being in boot camp. You know you're going through the worst kind of thing, but you know you're getting strong. This was boot camp for Yaakov. When he's done with this, he goes to confront Esav. Here he's going to, he told me that was mainly defense. He has to protect his family. He has to protect his integrity, his spirituality, his neshama, not to become contaminated in love. But now he goes into the next stage. Offense. He's going to send, he provokes Esav. He goes to make a tikkun in the world. And then he fights with an angel of Esav, struggling all night. He's battling darkness. Well, that's what life is all about. Our work in this world is to conquer evil. So Yaakov is working and he's championing. So he knows there is something there to explain to him why he's suffering. But then suddenly this story happens. What happens to his family? Oh, as we mentioned earlier, Yosef disappears. He thinks he's dead. His brothers, he thinks, murdered him. Which means that everything he did, his entire life's work, was now completely shattered. It was all meaningless. And Yaakov is sitting and wallowing in pain. Wallowing in the worst pain. Yaakov says, I'm going to go down ba'avel. I'm going to go down in mourning and sadness. Sha'oila. He says, I am living in purgatory. He says, I've messed up the entire plan of creation. Is there should be a Jewish people? It's all been destroyed. My life has been worthless. And he's living in such pain and such agony. And what is he gaining from it? What is coming out of it? It's senseless suffering. Senseless suffering. There's nothing he can grab onto. Nothing. And what happens? The Shechina leaves him, Ruach HaKodesh. The spirit of Hashem leaves him. He's in pain. He's in darkness. It's a whole new level of suffering. It's a whole new level of suffering. And he suffers through 22 years. And despite the suffering, he remains a tzaddik. He remains loyal to Hashem. He's suffering. Immense suffering. And even though he doesn't see, like he doesn't see why. Like, what's the point? What's the point of me continuing on? But he does continue on. He's sad. It's difficult. But he continues even through this madness, even through this darkness. Gewalt, Eibishter, why are you doing this to me? There's no answers. This is God taking him into a whole different place. Here, Yaakov's seichel doesn't work anymore. This is Hashem carrying him to a place beyond, like it really happened. Hashem was bringing him to Olam Haba. He was bringing him to the ultimate state. He was bringing him to Tchiyas HaMeisim, to Vayechi Yaakov Be'eretz Mitzrayim. Was a whole different dimension to bring Yaakov through to that. And this is, by the way, something in our own lives. You know, there are people that go through such unimaginable pain loss of relatives, people that suffer, and sometimes other deep internal suffering. And it sometimes doesn't have. See, you know, you may love, I'm fighting Gates of Horror, I have this difficulty. Sometimes it just seems senseless. And Hashem is taking Yaakov Avinu to a place that's beyond. This is the ultimate 17 years of Tchias HaMesim. The 17 years of Olam Haba that Yaakov is coming to, and Hashem is giving him. See, Yaakov asked. Bikish Yaakov Leisha B'Shalva. Yaakov wanted the peace, and Hashem was bringing Yaakov to the peace. But he has to go through an experience that's completely beyond the human scope of grasping and understanding. And then he gets there. Then he gets to that great light. But then the last question is, if that's the case, if Hashem is giving him something that he's not even asking for, he's bringing him to such, so why is Hashem waiting for him to ask? It says, Bikesh Yaakov Leisha B'Shalva. If what Yaakov asked for is what Hashem is answering him, then we understand Hashem is waiting for him to ask and he gives it to him. But if Yaakov didn't even ask for this, Yaakov asked for peace and being able to serve Hashem like the days of Mashiach. And Hashem is giving him ultimate reward of Olam Haba, where there is no more work, it's just pure delight, godly delight. Then why isn't Hashem give it to him immediately? Why does he have to ask for it? And the answer is, Hashem has a lot of goodies stored for us. Hashem has so much good waiting for each and every one of us. But a lot of times the only thing that's holding back from us getting it is us asking. Hashem wants the prayers of tzaddikim, and we're all tzaddikim. All the Jewish people are tzaddikim. Hashem wants the prayer nis'ava. Hashem, wait, so he said Hashem didn't give children to our mothers, even though they were supposed to have children. They're the mothers of the Jewish people. Hashem didn't give it to them until they asked. Till they cried and they begged, because Hashem desires the tefillah of tzaddikim. Hashem would not have given Yaakov none of this. None of these levels of shalva, the second level and the third level. Hashem wouldn't have given anything, both levels, if he wouldn't have asked. When Yaakov asked, Bikesh Yaakov asked, Hashem, please, take me, change my life. I want to move past challenge. I want to move into the world of Mashiach. Then Hashem said, okay, I'm going to give you Mashiach. Not only am I going to give you to enter into the world of Mashiach, I'm going to bring you into the ultimate reward of Olam Haba. It's going to be challenging and difficult, but I'm going to take you there. Follow me now, and I'm going to take you there. Which is a very, very powerful lesson to all of us. And that is that we are now completed our work in this world. We're all holding already. We finished, as a Jewish people, we completed our work in Torah and Mitzvahs. We're already at the threshold of Mashiach. And what do we have to do now? We need to ask. And not ask because it says in the Siddur to ask. To ask from our heart, from our soul. We're begging Eibishter, please give us Mashiach. We want, and we shouldn't be afraid. Here's, you might say, well, hold it. Yaakov didn't know what he's getting into. He asked a request, and Hashem brought upon him, not, he gave him his request, and he gave him above and beyond, but he put him through suffering. The previous Lubavitcher Rebbe, when he came out of jail after he was arrested and went through horrific suffering in the hands of the communists, they asked him if he would do it again. He said like this. He said, if you give me all the money in the world, I would not repeat. I would not do it over again. But if you give me all the money in the world to take away from me, that which I've gone through, I wouldn't sell it. In other words, I would never do it again, but everything in the world you couldn't take away from what I've gained. So it's similar to that as with Yaakov. Hashem gave him everything when he got to in the land of Zion, but who wants to go through this? So we might be afraid to ask for redemption. Who knows what we need to go through in order to come to that redemption? And the answer is, we've gone through every hell possible, the Jewish people. We've gone through the loss of the 6 million and the suffering the Jewish people have gone through. We've done above and beyond every darkness. And therefore, we've done the time already. We've gone through the rugzai shel Yosef, the suffering of Yosef, we did already. Now the reward is waiting. But the Eibishter is waiting. There should be a sincere request that Yidden cry out, Bikesh Yaakov, we're all Yaakov. All of us are Yaakov. Yaakov, as a Jewish people, should cry out, Essemach David Avdecha Meheira Satzmiach. Let the shoots of David HaMelech, which is Mashiach, let him sprout forth. And we say, Kili Shiyascha, why should the Eibishter give us Mashiach? Why should he bring that light to the world? Should he give it to us? Kili Shuascha, because to your salvation, Kivinu Kol Hayoim, because we're waiting all day long. Just because we wait, that's why we deserve, because we're asking for it. If you don't ask, then it might not come. It requires an asking. And a sincere, real asking. And when there's a Bikish Yaakov, when Yaakov, the Jewish people, ask and request, and say to Hashem, we've been so loyal, we've done so much, we completed our work, we want Geula, we want Mashiach, but we say it with an emes, Hashem will hear our cries. And the Eibishter will give us everything. Mashiach, Tchias HaMesim, the resurrection, Olam Haba, and all that light, because we've already done it all. We've gone through, the Eibishter stretched us beyond our any imagination, beyond anything humanly conceivable, what the Jewish people can, what a person can suffer, can endure. We've gone beyond that. We've done above and beyond. We're ready for Geula. May Hashem grant us the shalom and the shalva that we've been waiting for and we so have earned.